The hills are alive with the sound of murder.
Whoa, that got dark fast.
He jumped right in.
Trexploration.
Hello, and welcome back to Trexploration. I'm Albie.
I'm Chris.
I'm John.
And today we have an amazing special guest, one of the biggest Star Trek influencers on all of YouTube. It's Mr. Sean Ferrick from Trek Culture. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you very much. My ego is very stroked. Thank you very much for that. Lovely, lovely man. Yeah, I'm good. I'm kind of coming down off the joyful high of episode 5 with a bit of a bump as we go into episode 6.
Yes, we're going to talk about episode 6 today. We're talking about season 1, episode 6 of Starfleet Academy. Come, let's away.
Let's away, Albie.
What's that title? That's kind of like a song from the 80s, right?
But is different. It? I keep on thinking come sail away. I've been singing Styx yeah. all week.
Come, let's away. Right. Come, let's away.
So,
yeah.
It doesn't sound so whimsical. Come, let's away.
Right? So how you been, Sean, since we talked last? You're on vacation again. I appreciate you including us in all your vacation plans. It's great.
Thank you very much. I travel a lot, which is it is wonderful, but I do a lot of time in airports. So I have intimate details of many airports in the Western Hemisphere. So if nice. You need to know like a good spot where there's like a free power socket, I probably know some. But no, I'm good. My body has no idea what time, date, wherever I am in the world. And even we were talking just before coming on, I'm currently in Denver and the weather is unseasonably warm here. So I came over expecting there to be like snow and real cold snap and everything. And I've been walking around in a t-shirt. I've come from Ireland. Where it like we have a reputation for rain, but it was a particularly wet January. Like it rained for 4 weeks. And then I came here and it was like, I feel like I've traveled through time. So I'm okay in a really where and when am I kind of way.
Climate change is real. First time in 40 years, our humidity was frozen. I didn't know what to do with it. It was crazy. We were very confused and fascinated.
And Sean, I've been to Colorado and to Denver. Just give it an hour and a half. That weather will change. Don't you worry about it.
that is good. Just that there's a little bit of like yeah. I mean, I'm scared for the people who are like, you know, they've got all their snow tires on, you know, they've winterized everything. And now it's like, do we need to get the summer stuff out? Like, what?
Just wear like a Hawaiian shirt and a parka. And you're covered.
I mean, I literally have one of each. So, yeah.
But that's because you're an influencer. You're styling.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
So,
that word makes me shiver. Oh, no. No one should be influenced by me for many legal reasons.
Well, I think that the parka that you have, it's kind of like the away jacket in Wrath of Khan, though, right? It's got the hood, so it's pretty sweet.
It's got to be.
So tell us, I mean, you guys have been reviewing this season of Starfleet Academy, so... Everybody's undoubtedly watched what you've had to say about it, but I think I speak for everybody. I'd just like to get your overall impressions of the premiere of this new Star Trek series.
Like, I think generally I'm so, so happy with Starfleet Academy. I'm like, you know, it, obviously my impression only goes up as far as episode 6. Anyway, but like, it is exactly the Trek that we need right now. And not just because it's in the, you know, it's in the far future, although I think that is a really, really good decision. And I was with everybody else when I first heard that it was going to be set in the 32nd century. I was like, I'm not sure. You know, we had Picard was on the air. We still have Strange New Worlds. So, you know, my heart does love that era of Star Trek as well. But there is a lightness and a freedom that this show has. Like, anything that exists within an established timeline, you'd run into a barrier here, there, and everywhere. You know, I keep telling people I've just finished. I'm like 9 years behind everyone else. I've just finished Andor, for example, right? Mm. And I thought it was a fabulous, fabulous, fabulous show. In my head, I'm still like, okay, well, X, Y, Z still need to get to Rogue One, so there's still that. And you know, Picard had less of that you know, like, because there's such a gap between Picard and Discovery, whereas Strange New Worlds, you know, you've got the original series coming up. So, which is to say, not having to worry about that has been a wonderful part of Academy. Mm-hmm. But, oh my God, can I just gush about the cast? Mm. Like, please. How perfectly cast is this show? Yeah. And, you know, I think it's so funny. And I'm going to make the same mistake I always make. But don't worry, I'm also giving out to myself for saying this. Because they are not kids. But I still say, but they cast the kids so well. But they're all in their late teens and early 20s. Like, they're not kids.
Yeah.
But it's been so well done. Because I think there is a sort of a worry, a fear that, you know, perhaps when you cast younger performers that, and then especially when you have them alongside seasoned performers, like, I mean, Holly Hunter, you know, hello, did she bring the Oscar to set with her? You know what I mean? and there really hasn't been that. Like, look at Sandro Rosta. This is his first role. And I think he's doing so well because, you know, you have this character who is all of the ingredients for, oh God, are we just going to have the troubled, you know, jock who's had a tough life, wherever. Mm-hmm. And yet there he has brought so much depth to this role, so much nuance in the performance that has just been so enjoyable to watch. I've said it many times, I'll say it again. Karim DNA and Kyrese Brooks must be protected at all costs because they are just wonderful. And like just the joy they bring in interviews, you can see just radiating on set as well. Just everyone is so, so well cast. Gina Yashere, like crying, laughing, like Klingon French fusion food. Like, so much of this show is just so uplifting. And I was reading kind of like interviews before it aired where, you know, specifically Alex Kurtzman was saying why they chose to set it post-Burn, why they chose to kind of set it in a universe where the Federation is still finding its feet, because, you know, it would have been just disingenuous to have this perfect universe that everyone lives in and then to try and figure out what it looks like in there, because we don't live in a perfect world today. We've never lived in a perfect world. Like, no Star Trek has ever been born into a perfect world. And you have this complete blank slate of the 32nd century, which is exciting in a way that, and with all of the love in my body for all of the Treks that have come before, I've been probably most excited to see what this one does because you have that great unknown. Mm-hmm. That's my little rant.
That's a great point. That's a great point because when you think about what sets this apart from the teen drama, that du jour, you get them all the time. Mm-hmm. I feel like they can get some really meaty stories because we're not just talking about the Federation as it was in the classic series, Picard's time especially, where it was just so buttoned up. There are a lot of edges to this version of the Federation, and they have to navigate around it. These kids, you know, it's the metaphor for them navigating around themselves and becoming who they are, but it's like a perfect fusion. And you get all of the hope and I think the optimism that Trek embodies, you're trying to instill that in them, yet it has more, I would say, realistic nuances that you would probably have to face in a rough and tumble universe, which to me is a welcome change from the very buttoned up, as I said, staid Federation that we saw in a lot of the TNG era. So it brings a dynamic that I feel that DS9 embodied and was such an outlier because it was in that perfect world. Now that's the norm. And for me, that's a great addition and a great way to, I think, reestablish and reinvent, but also rediscover what makes Trek, Trek.
Perfectly put. I completely agree. Like, I mean, kind of the same question back on the three of you, like, what have your feelings been, you know, ups, downs, you know, how have you felt as this show has gone on?
I've really enjoyed it. I try not to watch teasers or trailers or anything, so I didn't know really anything. I knew the show was coming out, and the only thing I knew about thought I knew about Starfleet Academy is, oh, Tilly's going on there, so I guess it's gonna be like no Tilly. I haven't seen Tilly.
Will she ever make it? We'll see.
We'll see. But I've been, I wouldn't say pleasantly surprised. I didn't really have any expectations because New Trek has given us some very good things. I really loved Lower Decks. I really loved Strange New Worlds. It's given us some less good things. Discovery wasn't always doing it for me, nor was every episode of Picard. So, you know, track record, they're batting 500, let's say. But, you know, not going in, not knowing anything, and I've said this on the show too when we reviewed it, I didn't know that Paul Giamatti was going to be on the show. I didn't know Holly Hunter was going to be on the show. I didn't know that Tatiana Maslany was going to be on the show. So the opening scene of the opening episode, the three of them, I'm like, what is this? Is incredible. and I think the very first episode was more, I wasn't worried about like the teeny bopper thing so much. I was worried it's going to be, okay, the things that I didn't like about Discovery, because it's dark and it's all black and red, and okay, it's a lot of action, and I like the talking, I like the moral conversations of Next Gen. DS9 is my favorite episode for all the stuff that Chris mentioned. And by the end of the first episode, they've kind of shed that. You know, the second episode, they go into the academy and they really are their own thing. And it's brighter, literally brighter. And it's funnier. And it's like, it's more layered. And like, I've loved about this show that it seems like they've written the entire season start to finish. Not in the sense that they're telling one big arc like Discovery, but that they will drop a clue in episode one that pays off in episode three. They'll drop a clue in episode two that pays off in episode five. It's very well thought out. The acting is good, as you pointed out. I've had a lot of highs and just a couple of lows, and even the lows aren't that low. I'm really enjoying it.
For me, it might be recency bias, but out of all the new stuff, Stranger Worlds was my favorite. I love Stranger Worlds. There were missteps for me here and there, but for so far this show, season one, I didn't see any missteps or anything that I was like too let down by. And I'm loving the, like you said, Sean, the casting is amazing. The acting, the writing, the stories, they're all right there. It might be my favorite new Trek.
I have to say, to your point, Sean, the fact that you have Holly Hunter just bring the Oscar and Paul Giamatti. Thank goodness Tatiana Maslany doesn't have a bigger role, because there'd be no room for the kids. I just watched her absolutely kill it in She-Hulk. And how is that show not being renewed? She was so fantastic in that. If she could bring one-tenth the energy that she had carrying She-Hulk, yeah, those poor kids wouldn't stand a chance. It would just be the three veterans taking up all the screen time, rightfully so, in my opinion. So it would be a completely different show.
Hopefully we see her again one day. So today we're talking about season one, episode six of Starfleet Academy, Come Let's Away. And the air date was February 12th, 2026.
That's today!
Woo! How about that? It was written by Kenneth Lynn and Kelly Rosetter, and directed by Larry Tang.
Rosetter, I would say. It's Kylie Rosetter, not Kelly.
Kylie Rosetter. I'm not good at the name. Larry Tang. Did I get that one?
You got that one right. Yes.
Is that two in a row? We recently did one by him, right?
Like Larry was the last episode, I believe, as well.
Larry did episode five.
I wonder if they couldn't have rearranged the order, so maybe. Interesting. Okay.
Isn't it insane, though, when you look at what a weird and funky and stylistic episode five was, and then compare it to what we get in this episode? Wow, Larry, you got some range, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really brings it. Whatever the episode needs, he knows how to bring it to life. That's for sure.
Great direction, great cinematography in this episode. Yeah. Chris, for people who have not seen this episode recently or may need a reminder, can you give us one of your infamous episode recaps?
All right, there's a lot going on in this episode, guys, and I know I say this every time, but I feel like this one's the longest one yet, and by necessity. So We open up, and I know this is Albie's favorite part of the entire series, with a sexy times montage between Caleb times. And Tarima, complete with emo soundtrack. Things get so intimate that Tarima brings Caleb into her mind to the safest place she knows. And there, Caleb sees his old pal, AI Teddy Ruxpin, and cue the traumatic flashbacks about the first scene in episode one. Caleb is miffed at the reminder, and the mood is broken. Tarima is sorry, but angry at Caleb for not accepting her for who she is. Now to the main plot. The Athena is carrying cadets from the Academy and the War College to train in crisis response by conducting a mock rescue mission in a ship graveyard aboard the derelict USS Miyazaki, which lost its entire crew when testing out an experimental singularity drive. Half of the cadets, blue team, will go to the ship and get the computer and life support working. The other cadets, red team, will stay behind on the Athena and provide support. Blue team consists of Jaden, Sam, Caleb, Kyle, and War College cadet Bavi, the snarky Vulcan, and they are led by Lieutenant Commander Tomov, a new character that we haven't seen. That bodes well, I guess. Bavi says he was drawn to the War College thanks to Adventure Comics featuring the exploits of the Miyazaki. He called them inspiring. Caleb calls them Starfleet propaganda, designed to get poor kids like him to join up. Despite this, the kids work together as a team to accomplish the first task and reestablish life support in record time, thanks to Caleb's mechanical prowess. He is kind of a Mary Sue. Back on the bridge of the Athena, Genesis and Darum are providing support with other Red Team members when they detect weird readings. 30 unknown power sources have surrounded the Miyazaki, and intruders are boarding, putting an energy field around the Miyazaki, jamming comms and transporters. It is Reavers, Furies, claiming salvage and ransoming the away team for Latinum, threatening to eat the cadets if Aki doesn't comply. The Reavers, Furies, are human-alien hybrids that operate in the Outer Rim, disputed territories. They are ultraviolet and untrustworthy. Ake, Kelrick, and Vance put their heads together for a rescue plan. Frontal assault is out, as it would get the cadets killed. Vance has another solution. Call on our old friend, Nuss Braca. Reports say Nuss has a specialized weapon to combat the Reavers, Furies, and maybe we convince him to help us. Ake is like, You're crazy, Caleb. Vance is like the enemy of our enemy. And she's like, yeah, they're assholes. On the Miyazaki, Tomov isn't sitting idle. He makes a stand against the Furies that buys the kids time to get to the bridge, but it costs him his life. Bavi barricades the bridge in response to Caleb's disbelief at Tomov's sacrifice by quoting Spock from Wrath of Khan, and we all just had a nice fan moment, didn't we? Sam tries to work her hologram magic to reactivate the computer and put a force field around the bridge using a comic book to help them. We'll get to that later. Anyway, Nuss takes Vance up on his invitation, and Paul Giamatti returns for the role he was born to play. He smarms it up wonderfully, giving Vance his terms. Stop supplying dilithium to planet XYZ so I can monopolize trade and travel routes in that sector. While Vance goes to see if he can make the deal, Braca taunts Nala, recalling that she sacrificed her son to save her own crew during the burn. Her son died in circumstances very similar to the Miyazaki, and she could have rescued him but chose duty instead. And now the same is happening with Caleb. Back on the bridge of the Athena, Genesis and Darum get a bead on the Fury ship and propose launching a probe to pinpoint their locations. And not a moment too soon. On the Miyazaki, things look dire. Sam is having trouble getting the computer to respond, and Tarima somehow connects mentally with Caleb. She proposes to Aki that she use her heightened Betazoid powers to connect with the stranded cadets and help them. She and Occam explain that Tarima wears the regulator, the shock collar on her neck, because her mental abilities are so strong that she could damage those around her when she feels angry or hurt. That's how her father actually lost his hearing. But she feels now that she can control it and talk to Caleb. So here's the plan. Tarima will astrally project herself to the stranded cadets and give them an intermix formula to safely restart the Miyazaki singularity drive, disrupting the Fury's force field, enabling rescue. But that's actually plan B. Plan A comes from Nuss now that he has what he wants, a sonic weapon that will drive the Fury's crazy crazier, and cause them to lose control of their ship, disrupting the force field. Thank goodness Genesis and Darum found a way to pinpoint the enemy ship. Tarima mentally connects with Caleb and gives him the skinny. Access the main engineering computer and tell Bobby to access a specific program to reboot the singularity drive. Meanwhile, another ship, the Sargasso, is warping in with the sonic weapon to target the Furies. But something doesn't sit right with Ake. This is too easy. Braca is playing them. She's sure of it. He is actually working with the Furies the whole time. Back in the Miyazaki, they get the singularity drive working, but before the Athena can mount a rescue, the Furies break onto the bridge. Sam gets hit and is down. Tarima rips her inhibitor off and is seizing in sick bay. She's on sick bay. Remember, she's over in sick bay and she's projecting. So the doctor is standing over her all nervous. Bobby becomes the hero and takes a fatal shot to the chest to save Caleb. This sends Tarima over the edge. Yo, Caleb, tell everyone to duck. And she goes all Black Canary, using her mind powers to make a sonic wave that makes the Furies' heads explode. Braca disappears. He was playing a long game. As soon as the Sargasso left to fight the Furies, he had his pirates attack and ransack the highly classified space station it was guarding. Bobby is dead. Sam is down and short-circuiting. Tarima is in critical condition. Aki is pissed and bereft, and Braca sends a holographic message that he is sending her one more gift. And on that ominous note, we end this episode of Starfleet Academy, the mind-blowing episode 6, Come Let's Away. So much going on. I watched this episode 4 times and I still had to stop and figure out all of the moving parts. There was so
I'm at 5 times.
Much going on. It was
so much.
Something else. So I guess first impressions.
Why don't we go with Sean, the man of the hour?
Well, I was about to say, like, mind blowing, pun intended. I mean, I think this was darker than I was expecting Academy to get, because, you know, the previous 5, while they had their moments, you know, they were generally lighter or more contemplative, whereas this was like, we can do action and horror as well, because the Reavers, like those Furies, they are scary. Like, you really get this mad dog feeling off them, that, you know, Braca sent them because he knew they could cause chaos in the background while he played his game. Like, that really, really worked. And there is an easy spoiler, I guess, but there's an easy, like, Latin up scene of this is in it's when Braca and Aki are in the ready room together, both scenes, but particularly that one around the middle of the episode. I mean, that is just two fantastic actors just playing off each other. And they're both, like, Paul Giamatti is filling the room entirely with his words. Holly Hunter is filling the room with her lack of reaction, which itself is the reaction. It is absolutely nail-bitingly incredible. And I'm going to say this, and I want this on the record. First time a glitching hologram didn't piss me off.
Right. You must be good. Every time
Odo is on screen, you must get just
it's just like but I get it, there's jammy signals going on, we know it's a transmission, you know, there's all sorts of functions. This one worked, this one is fine. I am fine with this. This is grand. But
every time you glitched, overall, I thought of you.
Thank you. And that's what I want people to think of. I want people to be like, the hologram is glitching, is Sean okay?
Exactly.
But like, just overall, great to see in a 32nd century Intrepid ship for as short a time as we did see it, but like, great to see that as well. But just overall, and I think the show is sort of playing on us a little bit, in that you start with this, you know, like in any war film ever, the second the soldier takes out the picture of his honey back home, you're like, where do you want it? Do you want it in the head? Do you want it in the belly? Like, you're going to. And it's, you know, Tarima is going to end up in a coma by the end of the episode. So in a way, it is playing into that trope of, you know, we start with the very kind of the relaxed, the love scene, but it is ripped away from them. And it's all by external force. So much of this is just completely outside of all of their control. They were 100% led into a trap. And you're kind of like, this is horrible because these are students. Yes, they are cadets at an academy, sure. But like, this is when it kind of goes back to the, well, they kind of are kids, even though they're not, but they are definitely inexperienced. You know, you're like, it's bad enough when experienced Starfleet officers end up in these kind of situations. It's worse when, you know, it's like they should never have been in this situation. I will say, because you know me, I love my Easter eggs and I get my magnifying glass and everything. The bridge set of the Enterprise from Strange New Worlds looks well. because throw up a bit of black tarp and you can get away with so much, but it's going to swap out the captain's chair for something else. And yeah, the Enterprise is looking well, yep, as the Miyazaki. But yeah, I mean, listen, you know, I've always been the case of like, if the set's there, use it, you know? So that's kind of been mine. Just overall, like, first impressions, I think this is, I mean, it's easy to say this is the darkest episode of the season because it clearly is, but this has, I think, some of the best Nala Aki that we've seen so far. It kind of, like, it sounds unfair to say it's got the best Paul Giamatti, like, of the option of two episodes. Yes, we've got more Paul Giamatti just being amazing in this episode. And like, pour out, you know, F for Bavi, but I cared. Like, and he hasn't had anywhere near as much screen time as some of the others. And I cared when he got injured. Hell, I cared when Kyle got injured. And again, not that I shouldn't care, but, you know, because they feel like real characters. I worry for these characters when they are put in danger. So, yeah, loved it.
Awesome. Now, let's go with my interstellar bestie, Christopher DeFilippis. First impressions.
I think that this episode is the highlight of the season so far, and that's saying something with the Jaden episode that we got in number four. I really did not expect, as Sean was saying, for it to go as dark as it did. And when I'm thinking about it, it's just like, I don't know that it had any choice but to do that, because if you're going to introduce somebody like Paul Giamatti into the cast to play a baddie, you don't just want a comic book villain that's twirling his mustache and, oh, he got away this time, but he'll be back to... No, you want somebody that is going to, like, completely destroy their world. And he's smart enough to do it. Some of the machinations that he employs here are a little bit far-fetched, but the episode comes together so well with all the action, with all the pathos, with all the character beats that... At the end, you don't care because you had such a good time watching Paul and Holly do their thing. And I had such a good time watching all of the kids have their moments, whether they be good moments like Darum and Genesis on the bridge, showing that they are going to be great commanders one day and captains. And all the stuff that the away team goes through, I feel like it's kind of a necessary wake-up call, even though Bobby didn't have to die, for Caleb to really, are you in this or are you not in this? And you can't just sit on the fence and all over it like you do all the time and pay lip service to the ideals without the sacrifice. So it got a lot deeper than I anticipated. And that's what I was talking about when we were discussing just at the top, just overall impressions, like where this show places them in context of the rest of Trek and the types of lessons that they're capable of learning and teaching on this show. I mean, I don't know that I could see another Star Trek show that could do this as convincingly. And for that, I think, yeah, this really takes Academy to another level for me. I hope that it's able to sustain this.
The beautiful John Irons.
I was watching the scene between Ake and Braca, and I'm like, this is why these actors are signed on to this role. Like somebody told them that they're going to get to play in this scene, and they're like, I'm in. It's, I mean, they're Oscar worthy actors for a reason. It was incredible. And I don't, you know, I didn't like count the minutes, but it's, you know, it's at least a third of the episode is just the two of them, you know, and it's not even, and they're going toe to toe, but it's not like they're yelling at each other. Like you said, Sean, it's, you know, and when he's got his back turned, you see her break a little bit and recompose herself before he turns around again. And he's doing all of this because he knows he has to keep her. He's reminding her of all his tragedy because he knows he has to keep her off balance because she's smart enough to figure out what he's doing if he doesn't do that. It's this wonderful cat and mouse. I mean, just like that one little part of the episode, of this incredible episode. My little, you know, 90s nerd heart, the Miyazaki, the Miyazaki.
There are olds in the room. Can you explain it? Not me, but maybe Albi doesn't know what you're talking.
Okay. So there is a famous animated film director. I am Hayao Miyazaki.
Oh, okay.
Spirited Away. The yes, one animated.
Sure, sure. Yes.
Spirited Away, Princess Mononoke, Howl's Moving Castle.
My pal Totoro, my friend Totoro.
My neighbor Totoro.
Neighbor Totoro.
Ponyo. It's, Ponyo. If you can think of like a very, very famous anime film, it's probably Miyazaki. Mm. And the fact that, you know, it wasn't named after just someone that we know from Star Trek or some other famous military person or just some place that's, I mean, all of those things are great, but like, not only, and they doubled down on it, not only did they name the ship the Miyazaki, but they saved the ship with manga. Quick, scan this comic book. I was like, and that's why, and honestly, we should have known, based on Strange New Worlds, we should have known after there was such a silly episode last, and not that it wasn't a good episode, but it was probably the silliest episode of the season so far, last time, because that's the Strange New Worlds model. They'll give you something very lighthearted, and then they will rip your heart out the following episode. Like they give you like the nice little palate cleanser because they know what's coming. We should have known what was coming. I don't know what's coming next. I had to actively stop myself from watching the next episode after this so that we could record. So you're welcome, and I hope you guys appreciate the sacrifice. I'm as soon as we get off. As soon as we get off mic, you better believe I will be popping in episode 7.
Awesome. For me, I did like the sexy times at the beginning. I might have watched that more than a few times than the rest of the episodes.
That's where all our views were.
Yeah, that's what happens. First view every time.
I gotta give a thumbs up to that scene. And I liked the cinematography. I liked the music. I like the feel of, you know, the young adult romance, that genre, you know, that's for me, and it's in Star Trek, so I love that part. The first watch, I don't know if I lost blood from my brain, but at the end of the first watch, I couldn't comprehend what I'd watched. I knew it was good, but I didn't know what I had watched. So I did watch this episode 5 times, and it took me that long to kind of get it. Amazing acting, Holly Hunter and Paul Giamatti. I mean, this is the For Your Emmy Consideration episode that they send in, I think. And I think they would be contenders for real for Star Trek. I mean, you're throwing Oscar winners for an Emmy, maybe. But I have to say, and for me, it's kind of weird. I always usually connect with the episodes I love. And I've been connecting with every episode so far this season of Starfleet Academy. But for some reason, I just couldn't connect to it. Like looking at it, watching it, I know it was amazing work and nothing bumped me. I didn't dislike anything of it. And I thought all the parts were amazing. But for me, it just didn't come together.
That's interesting you say that, Albi. I mean, Sean, when you've discussed, have you come across people who have said that too? Because I haven't discussed this with anybody until we sat down to discuss this now, because I'm not plugged into the network that Albi's plugged into with all you guys. But have you gotten other people that are bumped by this a little bit? Or
I will say, no, ye are the first people that I'm speaking to about this episode.
Oh, okay.
So, sorry, I did, obviously, I've spoken to a couple of the Trek culture people, so we're kind of more or less the same boat. Right. That's really interesting, because I think it is, it's the same, it's true of all media, it's true of all stories, is that sometimes things just will hit some people differently than it will hit others. Mm-hmm. And that is as fair and as valid as anything else. You are completely wrong. Don't get me wrong, Albi. You are a terrible human being. But...
you are completely right about me being wrong. I agree with you.
Excellent. Brilliant. But no, that is interesting because, like, I've seen... Now, we're more going back to last week. There was people who they couldn't gel with the stylization mm-hmm. of the episode. So they were like, I love this, I love this, I love this, but I just, the style of it just broke it for me. And whereas I might be like, oh, but sure, I like this. But okay, right, I see what you mean by that. I see where you're coming from with this. And like, in this episode specifically, like, I love, like, John, I'm with you, I love the fact that, like, comic books basically saved the day for some of the characters.
Saved most of the day.
And yet, I suspect there will be people that's going to lift them straight out of the episode. Because I think one consistent thing that I have seen people, I think, struggling with the most with Academy, or maybe not the most, but is the modern slang. And the fact that, yes, it's set in the 32nd century, but also these people are definitely from 2026. Mm-hmm. You know? And I kind of like, there is definitely a fairness to that, because I can see what they're doing. They are writing this for an audience who might be, it's funny when you had an episode like episode 5, which is so clearly written for DS9 fans, but this is a sort of an invitation to new viewers to come into Star Trek. So I absolutely understand why a lot of the characters speak the way that they do. And then I know that is going to be like a brick wall to some people as well, because they're like, I can't get past the fact that this sounds like it's happening next door, and yet the next generation, it was, everyone was delivering a speech the whole time, and we were at a conference, and which I love about TNG. I've always loved that. And it's just, it's so funny. You will have the exact same presentation, will hit so many different people completely differently. And as much as I can sit here and say, Albie, you're wrong. No. It's really interesting, and that is it is all valid, because I think the best thing we can do is discuss our differences and to discuss the things we liked, we didn't like, the things that we engaged with, the things that didn't turn us, you know, in the right direction. I was going to say turn us on, sounds wrong, but I think a show is good when it gets you thinking, you know, and even if you're thinking about hey that didn't work for me, you're still thinking about it, and I think that's still a victory.
I think that's valid. I'd like to dig into that a little bit. I mean, Albie, it didn't connect with you, even though you recognized the, you know, everything, all the good stuff on display. Do you think it was due to not just the darker tone, but the lighter feel that Academy has set up for you? Because you're much more, and I'm not going to try to pigeonhole you into like a type, but you do like much more of the rom-com-y aspects. Yeah. Of most things. So I don't think you and I have ever discussed like what's like the darkest thing you like. And that's maybe a conversation for another show. But
Battlestar. I really enjoyed Battlestar, the new one, the Ronald D. Moore one. And I'm surprised that I didn't connect with this as much, because I love the Caleb and Tarima romance through line. And for me, this is basically kind of like an Imzadi episode. They seem to be Imzadi. They haven't said it yet, but they seem to be each other's first one, not sexually, but, you know, emotionally connecting, I think, because of Field of Flowers. Mm-hmm. So it would be something right up my alley, I think. But I watched it with a critical eye, or maybe I'm just in a weird place. But like, for me, the aliens look like stunt dudes in party city costumes. And I thought for most of the episode at the end, they were going to take off their masks and go, ha, we pranked you or something. And, you know, they spent all the millions of dollars on these beautiful sets, and those sets are like perfect. But then, you know, those hallways look like they were just Mylar tubes from Party City again with some LEDs. And I'm like, you know, I guess they were trying to save money in this episode. I don't know. But just there was just things that like felt weird to me, and I just couldn't get into it. And maybe it was just the convoluted, you know, Paul Giamatti and Holly Hunter going back and forth and none of it being true or what's going to happen. And then other things happening. And I'm like, what is happening? You know, and, you know, they explain it, but it shouldn't take me five times to get it.
I hear you. And I feel like, yeah, I call them Reavers because, I mean, it's just such a blatant sort of lift from Firefly, but I was really put in mind of Farscape, That's why I said the Outer Rim. When the Furies came on, it looked like something more that you'd see out of Farscape, right down to like sort of the B-movie aspect of them. I mean, had they not had that weird whatever, that quantum shifting going on, you're right, Albie, it would have just been guys with like the Unknown Comic with a paper bag on their head.
It looked like bed sheets and a garbage bag. And I was like, thinking that they put the little time shift in to try to save it in post, maybe.
All they needed was a Muppet to complete that. And
that would have made it better for me.
You leave Claudia Black.
You leave Occam alone.
Everything needs a Muppet.
So I actually liked the kind of trash bag set like that, like seriously, like I was like, to me, that is very Star Trek, you know? It's the aliens. I mean, whatever, I guess. If we're saying like things that didn't quite work for me, the direction of the fight in the hallway, it was hard for me to keep track of what was happening in the fight because of the strobe light, because it's already dark, because everyone's wearing exactly the same thing. You know, it's chaotic, and I know that's on purpose, but it's also hard for me to, oh, that's Kyle who got bit. Okay, well, did he get shot? No, he's bitten. Is he dead? No, they got him away. Oh, he sacrificed. Like, I had to watch it a couple times before I, like, I knew what happened because of the aftermath, but like, as far as actually seeing it happen, that was tough for me to keep track of. So all right, so correct me if I'm wrong. Is the you got me calling them the Reavers now? The Furies.
The Furies.
Are these the same aliens from Prodigy who were like shifting through time? Do you remember that? Like season two? And I meant to rewatch Prodigy because that's what I thought the first time. You remember, like, they're bouncing back and forth through time, and there are these, and almost said Will Smith, Will Wheaton, although that would be awesome. Paramount, if you're listening, please. we need the Star Trek Men in Black crossover.
So the ones in Prodigy, they are terrifying. They're the Loom, right? And they're
the Loom,
like, they're right, one of the most disturbing villains, like honestly, one of the most disturbing villains in all Star Trek. Because if they get you, they don't kill you. They erase you from history. You never existed. Like, that is so scary. And like, you know, oh, but Prodigy's a kid show. No, it isn't. Anyway. So we now have another scary inclusion for Trek with these lads, because they don't seem very nice, these Furies. They all seem furious,
kind of bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I guess you know, in case you were thinking because like last episode, it's lighthearted. No, they let you know right off the top. Okay, this is not a PG episode. This is rated R, maybe PG-13. Depending on how much you slow down your
it's either going to be PG-13. I went frame by frame. It wasn't R. Okay. I was hoping.
Thanks for doing that research for us.
I never wanted to edit anything more. Send me the raw files. I'll do a different edit.
Okay. So
We
have to talk about that scene. I mean, it is one of the most blatant and demonstrative sexual scenes in all of Star Trek. I mean, I think the only one that beats it is the one in Disco in season one.
The Klingon sex.
Yeah. But I think it works. I think that though, coming into a Star Trek show with teen love and that soundtrack is going to, if anybody was looking for an excuse to be a hater, more of an excuse. I think that this is something that it's going to be like red meat to them. And I didn't mind it. I liked it because I think it fits in with the feel of the show. I think it fits in with the tone of the show, but I could see that being quote problematic because it's not some Bach cantata or somebody sprouting about, you know, Robin Hood or Shakespeare or whatever, you know, public access, public domain was available in 1992, you know.
I love that opening
Sherlock Holmes, as it turned out.
Yeah, yes. Sherlock Holmes.
Struck me as really interesting about how that scene is presented, because obviously it's filmed, you know, very, very carefully to avoid, you know, an R rating. But also, when they're talking, it's so relaxed. You know, like, Tarima is telling Caleb about her first time, and it was with a Delton, and it is, none of it is like played for anything less than this is totally comfortable. We are grown-ups, you know, even though they might be on the younger side of grown-ups, you know, we are adult in the way that we are both, you know, expressing ourselves both vocally and of course physically. Because I was thinking it would be easy to do like one or the other. You know, you have a conversation over a cup of tea where you talk about, you know, some, you know, previous sexual experience, or you just do the visual scene, you know, and you do a kind of a heated rivalry or something like that, which I've really been enjoying. Every week it's like, you know, are we doing heated rivalry with Jaden this week? Are we waiting for next week? And actually, I thought it was both really, like, you know, it's obviously adult, but it was really accessible, and not one frame of it was in the trailer. And the reason I think that's important is because that, to me, makes it far less, like, I don't get gratuitous from this. Mm. I don't get, because sometimes, you know, like, Star Trek Into Darkness is the great example of, you know, like, okay, what's this film about? I don't know, but Alice Leave was in her underwear in one scene because it was in the trailer. You know, it's like, yeah, okay, there was no need for that. Whereas this was, it felt like a natural progression of these two characters, and straight away it is both physically intimate and then it becomes very emotionally intimate. You know, this Caleb, who is, you know, built like the side of a house, is the one who is, he is the one who struggles with the vulnerability here. I really enjoyed that scene for how it's presented, and just like, you know, is this some weird Betazoid stuff? And she's like, it's not weird. It's just part of me. Like, I just thought that was such a well done scene.
I really liked that this scene felt earned in every way. Like, you've seen, like, obviously they've been attracted the whole time. And we don't see, this is the moment where they go from, like, they've already been doing it with the start. So this has been an ongoing thing. We don't get to see that moment or the first time they get into bed together or whatever. It felt earned because you know about his vulnerability issues. And like, one of the first things that I think Ogham says, that he feels safe with you. So that's a callback to that. Mm-hmm. It felt earned because, and this is what I really liked about it. The fight in episode 2, where she was like, how could you not tell me? And he's like, I didn't want to reveal it. That one to me felt kind of forced. Like, what are you mad about exactly?
Yeah.
Because you did just meet him. Like, it makes sense. Like, of course he's not going to, like, it. Not only did it not come up, it's you know, like, no, like, I don't understand. That felt like a forced fight because they needed to have a fight in that scene about something. Here, it makes sense. This makes sense that this was too intimate. And he does say something that he regrets. And she, like, and immediately after, they're called, you know, up to class for the mission, and they don't get to talk about it after. And so all that stuff is still kind of in the air when she has to reach out to him, like, telepathically. So this, I feel like everything that scene didn't do right, this episode nailed.
Yeah, I agree. That whole thing where you say it feels earned. And again, I think that's why I really enjoyed the tone and the music and everything that they did, because it just felt so natural. And the pillow talk was actually really sweet and really funny at times. Like, say what you will. I mean, I know that Sandra is built like a crazy hulking maniac, but the just the little turns in this, when she's whispering what the Deltons do, and he's like, oh, really? You know, just, he has such wonderfully expressive face, and he can really, you know, be vulnerable and be funny and be not just, you know, the jock. So it's nice to see them in those moments. It makes it feel even more earned as the episode goes on. I was just wondering, you know, it was unfortunate that they had that fight, but the fact that she could reach him across the space in his mind space shows that, okay, he felt vulnerable and he felt like maybe a little bit put off by it, but He's still open to her. He's still connected with her in a deeper way. He hasn't shut her out. I don't know that like Betazoid thing, if there is some way that you can shut out an Imzadi. I don't know really anything about like the whole Imzadi thing, but I just like the fact that despite it all, he's still open to her. I think he still feels safe with her, even though he was freaked out by that moment.
I was wondering, because I know that this has been a complaint among some Star Trek fans, is like, oh, but her eyes aren't dark enough to be a Betazed. Like, what? Her eyes should be darker. Well, I wondered if, you know, they're like, well, and I guess the theory was when she takes the thing out and she goes Dark Phoenix, which I figured that was coming, but I thought it was going to be the other way. I thought it would be a bad thing. But instead, she does it to save the day. So I wonder, maybe if you need a canon reason, maybe her eyes aren't as dark because she is so much more powerful. Maybe the most powerful Betazed telepaths have slightly lighter eyes.
I think it's fair. Like there is things in Academy which maybe don't match up with established continuity. Like, and I think, yes, people have noticed Betazed eyes is one of them. All Betazoids were black beforehand. They don't seem to be anymore. We had a joke when episode 2 was coming out, like, you know, it was because she's a member of the first house. Ooh, they can have whatever color eyes they like. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's one or two things in this, like, for example, poor El Bavi, when he gets shot, an awful lot of red blood comes out the back of him. So there is there's little things like that. And, yep, you know,
hopefully they fix that before it airs.
We'll see.
I didn't even think about it.
You know, there are little things. And that's it as well. Like, I have had to sort of ask myself a bit this season. It's like, yep, okay, look, I've got my list. I've got my little, right, that doesn't do, you know, in the Cisco Museum. The Cisco Museum was a funny one because I was watching the episode back again. And when the voiceover is, you know, Sam walks in and the voiceover identifies, yep, Sarah Sisko, who was part prophet and the mother of Sisko, but then over on the family tree, they have the part prophet under the wrong name. Things like that, you know, it's like, right, okay. But is it making me not enjoy the episode? No. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know, will I notice a little bit of details? Yep, cool. And that's part of what I do. I get my notepad and I will go through them because I am a continuity officer's worst nightmare. Mm-hmm. But I'm still enjoying everything I'm seeing. I love, John, your comparison there to Dark Phoenix, because you're like, definitely, I think, you know, why would you introduce a device if it's not going to be broken at some point or another? And I like as well that they did it now. We still have 4 episodes to go. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Assuming she survives the coma, I feel she will survive the coma.
Hopefully. I don't know, Sean. I don't know. I'm worried for that kid.
I know, but I mean, like, you know, they've killed enough people in this episode.
Bobby.
Poor old Tomov. What did he do wrong?
I don't know. He seemed like such a nice guy.
He did, and he liked comics as well.
He only had 2 days to retirement.
Yeah, I thought of that.
I was like, this is like the first scene where we actually get to interact with Bobby, like, to, you know, where it's not just like I'm backing up my bully classmate. He seems cool. I mean, I thought he was cool before, but like, yeah, I was very audibly O-ting with my O-sh is the thing that I said.
I like that. Like on the O-sh meter, it was high.
It was high.
Yeah.
At least it really 6. Was.
Well, I loved a lot of the parts. One of the parts I really loved was when Noosefer Braca flicked Holly Hunter's hair a little bit while they were talking. And I just I loved everything they did there. But just those moments, like the when he looked away and the hand thing. Sean, what were some of your favorite parts of this episode?
I mean, clear and away, my favorite scene is it's Noose and Nala in the ready room. It is just like, mm-hmm. Right, you said it perfectly. This is going to be the Emmy nomination for the pair of them, as well it should be. But all of the little character moments, and actually, thank you for mentioning, of course, Genesis and Darum over on, they are on the Athena. They probably get like, in a way, they get the least amount to do of everyone, and yet Genesis is still critical in discovering the Venari Ral ship. I think this episode feels painful for everyone, and that's part of why it works so well. You know, like, everyone is doing their little bit to contribute to the overall, and I just want them to fire a ton of torpedoes at that shuttle with Bracca on it, but also don't, because he's such a good villain and I don't want to lose him. You know, I kind of, as I sit here talking to you right now, I have no idea where the season is going. Please do not kill off Noose Bracca. Like, but also punish him. Punish him, please. But don't kill him off, because, you know, we need to see more of him before he gets close to Dukat levels of best villain in all of Trek, but he's a bastard.
Has he has he already surpassed Mark? I wonder. He's only got the two. He's only got the two appearances so far. So
That's a pretty I've seen the first 10. Pretty big
shoes. Pretty big shoes to fill. So
I couldn't help myself.
So how about you, John? Favorite things in the episode?
Agreed. I mean, everything that I've already mentioned, the scenes between the two of them in the ready room, the fact that they gave all the love to Miyazaki and the comic books, how much they earned that first scene with the two of them in bed, the little things where, like, the cadet who couldn't hack it, you know, it sounds disparaging when I say it that way, but it's an incredibly stressful situation. And not everyone is cut out to do this. And
she was the normal human in the room.
She was the normal person in the room. And it's not like she's like, oh, no, it's not like she lost her. It's not like she lost it. But she needed to. And also, shout out for having an older black woman on the bridge. Oh. That was cool. Like, just to have her lead her away. Like, she was just like, it wasn't even a thing that just, oh, yeah, sometimes old people can still serve. Like, that's not something that you see a lot. I know I'm basically just recounting the episode. My favorite part was the episode, Chris.
Oh, well, great.
Including the trash bags.
Especially the trash bags.
Shout out to Glad and Hefty.
All right. Chris. What about you?
My favorite part of the episode is undoubtedly Noose's reverse Kirk speech, calling the Federation bureaucratic chlamydia throughout the sector. I thought that was an amazing. He's always got these turns of phrase. And nobody but Paul Giamatti could pull this off. Origami Chicken being the prime example. just the way that he goes at, and like the dialogue that they write for him, is so unexpected to me all the time. Again, it's not like mustache twirly. He has a way of getting to Nala and really like getting under her skin, and at the same time being completely like dismissive of her. I love the fact that when he first saw her, he's just like, "You look like shit." And it was just like, you know, so he's going to be a bastard through and through, but he's the most compelling bastard you've ever seen. And it didn't hurt that he was flying, he had his own little gold-plated NX-01. Yeah. That, to me, the little hero shot right there, did my Enterprise-loving heart good. So
it's the same one you have, right?
Yeah, I think it was. I think it's that one. It's just painted gold. So that was a fun little nod to Enterprise. I'm waiting to see if they do anything else with Archer or any of the crew. I know we've had the Sato atrium. Sato atrium. So so little things like that also help. But yeah. Maybe this is final thoughts. So I'll save some of that for final thoughts because we're almost there. But overall, an episode like this usually isn't as layered as this one was. And there were so many different character beats in this that you wouldn't expect from what is basically an action episode. So my favorite part is obviously, Paul Giamatti, the callback to Enterprise, and really just the Starfleet competence porn coming back front and center. How about you, Albie?
What was the question?
Your favorite part.
Oh, thank you. my favorite part, if I'm being honest, I got to go with Sexy Times. But I liked that little moment between Jaden and Kyle. I really liked that. Just the I'm here for you. We're together. We're going to get through this. And it not even said out loud, but That's what they communicated. And of course, the Holly Hunter and Paul Giamatti of it all. And I guess I'll just wrap into my final thoughts and ratings, and then we'll go around. For me, like I said, I didn't quite connect with it, but I'm not going to give up on it. I'm going to watch it a few more times until I like it. You know, one of those things where I just keep my eyes open. But like, I can tell it's an amazing episode. Why I didn't connect with it, I have no idea. Final rating out of 5 wacky objects, I'm going to go with 3 bowls of cleansing milk.
Ooh, out of 5. All right.
Yes.
That's John, a low rating for you. Wow.
It really is.
They didn't like it.
It's my least favorite of the 10.
Holy, what?
Yes. I don't know what's... It's probably a me problem. I got to probably check my levels in my brain.
I got a lot of problems with you people.
I was going to ask if you think it was because this felt kind of like a part one of a two-parter since it ended on such a dark note.
It very much does.
And I was wondering if that's why you didn't like it. But when Chris asked you, like, all of the reasons that you listed also made sense too. So I didn't even mention it. But
so.
I liked almost everything in this. It's not my favorite. The Jaden debate episode is still my favorite, but this is a very close second. I'm gonna give it 4.7 red herring didn't actually come into play singularity drives out of 5.
Yeah, tiny little fireflies. Sean,
I loved it. I loved it. I thought it was a brilliant episode. I thought it was everything to me came together. And I am going to give this 4.5 comics that I want to read out of 5.
Yes.
I'm sure it's coming.
I have to say, do you know if we're going to make those? Yeah. Have we heard anything? I definitely want that. A special short run. I'll buy it. Isn't that weird? Didn't connect with the episode, but I want the comics. I just want everything Star Trek.
You just want all merch. That's all.
Yes. Chris, bring us home.
I've been kind of gushing over this episode. The comic thing really bumped me. I'm sorry. I thought that was stupid. I'm just going to say it. I haven't had a chance to say it yet. That was just dumb.
I loved it.
However, I understand why they did it. It kind of worked in the context, I guess, if you don't think about it too hard, because they had to have that specific issue where the crew dies for it to work. What if they had
the inaugural issue? He's got all the issues. It's a hologram. He's got the set. It's just he just pulled it up off his files.
Anyway, it was still just anyway. For a lot of far-fetched stuff, that was the most far-fetched for me. But what I loved about this episode is not what it did and everything that we've been talking about, but what it didn't do, because when I heard that this one was sort of a cliffhanger through the grapevine, I was expecting Tatiana to come back. I was expecting to have like that full circle. Here's your mom. Here's Nuss with your mom. Now Caleb is going to forsake Starfleet to go with his mom. Come, let's away. I expected this to be the reunion episode, and that Caleb was going to turn his back on all of his growth and all of his friends and Holly Hunter and all that. I did not expect like this just flat out war episode that brought these characters like up a notch in their life lessons. It can't be the same show going forward with all the shenanigans and the frat parties and the turf wars and all that. I feel like it's turned a corner here, and I think it really needs to sort of stay now on this level. Not to say it can't still have fun, but these are going to be changed people going forward, or anyway, they should be if the show is true to itself. So I love that about this, because it marks an evolution for the show and for the characters, brings it to a place that I didn't expect. And still, we're saving Tatiana, maybe best for last. I don't know how she comes back. I don't know if she comes back. But
hopefully we see her again. She-Hulk, all green.
Right, right. So
it'd be awesome.
I still have that to look forward to, and I still have this amazing episode. So I'm going to give this one, undoubtedly my favorite of the season, I'm going to give it 5 gold-plated NX-01s out of 5. And we want to know what you out there think here in YouTube land. Please tell us. You can do so right below in the comments section. Let us know what you think of this episode. You can also follow us on Patreon. Patreon. Go to our Patreon community, patreon.com/trexploration. You can support the show there in many different levels. Albie is tweaking it all the time, so go see what he what he's come up with this week. You can also find us on Blue Sky. That's trexploration.bluesky.social. Send us an email, trexplorationpod@gmail.com. Send us your pictures. Albie will put them in the credits.
Uncensored, please.
You can send me gold-plated NX-01s, P.O. Box 542, Bayport, New York, 11705. That's P.O. Box 542, Bayport, New York, 11705. Give me a thrill. I love going to the post office box and finding something in it. It's my favorite thing. You can also support the show in a one-time manner. Albie's going to pop up QR codes and Zelle and Venmo and Cash App and whatever. Shoebox full of 20s, again, for that P.O. Box 542, Bayport, New York, 11705. Just remember that any comments that you send us will maybe be used in a future episode of Trexploration. I should also say thanks to our Trexplorers. You know who you are. And they join the ranks of our other members, including our special lifetime member, the omnipotent Willard. Thank you, Willard. And our crew of intrepid Trexplorers, which include our cadets, Liz and Linda and Rick Tatro, our Lieutenant Commander, Scott Seligman, Cosplay Dad, and Christian Daljo, and of course, our captain, Daljo, the esteemed Captain Charles from Texas, Captain on the Bridge. Charles. Thank you, one and all, for everything you do for spreading the word about Trexploration. So, Albie, do we know what the name of the next episode is?
Yes, I have it written down here. The name of the next episode, let me get to it on our show sheet, is episode log lines and titles are embargoed for the Monday before the specific episode is available to stream on Paramount Plus in the U.S. So woo, that sounds like a good one.
We've seen that one 7 times already.
So publicity still of advanced episode here. Okay. Sean, I'd like to thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Trexploration. It means so much to us, and we really appreciate the rub you and the other Star Trek YouTube community are giving us and embracing us, and we really appreciate it. Can you tell us what you got coming on Trek Culture for us?
Thank you very, very much. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me, because these are just lovely. Yeah, we have obviously the ups and downs for each of the episodes are coming. Thursdays? We aim for Thursdays. And we have our What the Hell Just Happened reaction videos as well. We have lists galore. We have our BTS videos. We also, if anyone here watching this is going on Star Trek The Cruise this year, come up, say hi. I will be there. And we will be on a boat. I can literally not run away from you. So please come up and say hi. It'll be good fun. But yeah, so that is the next big thing. And then real life after that. But we're not ready to discuss that yet. So yeah. But yeah, thank you so much for having me. You are awesome.
Thank you so much. And if anybody out there has 4 tickets to the cruise they're not going to use for me, Chris, John, and Serenity, we'll take them. Send them to that P.O. box. Let us know.
You have an address. There's no excuse.
All right. So for Trexploration. Oh, wait. Before I go, there's a bonus episode coming up. So if you're a YouTube member or a Patreon member, you'll get to see more thoughts by Chris, John, and myself on this episode. We'll go into depth and talk about stuff that doesn't even matter. but that's what we do. So for Trexploration, again, thank you, Sean. For Trexploration, I'm Albie.
I'm Chris.
I'm John.
And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
alive with the sound of murder.